This program was first broadcast on Canterbury's access media station, Plains FM, and was made with the assistance of New Zealand On Air.
Kia ora, and welcome to Yak Yarns, brought to you by the Canterbury District Health Board Youth Advisory Council.
Yak Yarns is an informative show that aims to educate and bring awareness to all things youth health. You can find us on our Instagram, Facebook and website.
Let us know if you have any questions
or if there's anything you want to know from our friendly health professionals.
We hope you enjoy this episode. It's time to yak about health.
Hey guys, welcome along to episode 4 of Yak Yarns. My name's Chelsea, I'm the Deputy Chairperson of the CDHB Youth Advisory Council, and this is my friend Tori. I've got Jackie Maguire along, a clinical psychologist. Thanks so much for joining us, Jackie.
My pleasure. Thank you for having me.
But we'll start off just letting Jackie introduce herself, what she does, just anything about it.
Sure. So, well, thank you for having me. So I'm a clinical psychologist, but I'm a bit of an unusual clinical psychologist. So most clinical psychologists probably work in a setting where they see people one-on-one or they support people that are struggling in their life, and they work with them to kind of work out what's going on and what their challenges are, etc. And yeah. That was my training. I have always had a bit of a love for businesses and for entrepreneurship. So I took my clinical psychology and I paired that with business. And most of my career has been spent working with organisations, helping them look after the wellbeing of their people. So I do lots of training and working with CEOs and their teams about how do you make wellbeing more than a tick box, which is for the law, to actually we really look after our people and care about them and know that if our staff turn up to work and they're well and they're well supported, then actually they'll work better, etc. So that's where most of my work's been spent. And on the side, I do fun things like what's really called science communication. That's really my passion. So I spend a lot of time talking to the media. You're a channel one watcher, you've probably seen me during COVID. Yeah. I write quite regularly for people like The Herald and stuff and The Spin-off. And I've just launched a podcast, which is bringing international psychologists really talking with me about cool things or amazing theories that are going on, but how do we make them relevant to New Zealand? So
awesome. It's
called Mind Brew. And for those of you that are in your early 20s, if the last episode that came out is called How to Be Miserable in Your 20s, it's a funny name. But as with a psychologist that wrote a book called that, which is really like the reverse of well-being. So it tells you everything you should do if you want to be really miserable, which of course you will flip it to be
awesome.
Well and happy. So yeah. Me.
Awesome. Cool. Thank you. That's really cool to know. Like you've had like a massive kind of broad range of things. I think that's really cool. Like it's, you're not just working in like a clinical setting, but you've been working in with organizations and talking about that. Cause I think it kind of gets missed, the wellbeing side of things sometimes. Like it's just a work every day sort of thing where wellbeing can sometimes get left behind. So I think it's really cool that you get to go in there and talk about that stuff. Cause I think it's quite cool. So awesome.
And I think for all the young, you're going to get more. So,
Cool. So we kind of tonight we asked young people about if they had any questions for you around mental health and wellbeing. So kind of one of the big questions we got through was, what is a psychologist? You know, what should I expect if I want to go see a psychologist? Yeah, just a big general question.
Yeah, so there are lots of different types of psychologists. So I'm a clinical psychologist, and clinical psychologists really are trained to formulate. And what that means is we're trained in a very scientific way to work with people to go, what's going on for you right now? What perhaps are your struggles, or where might you be a bit stuck in your life? What's gone on before that to lead to that? So, you know, imminently before, is there something that's triggered that? And then, you know, kind of historically, are there things that have happened in your life that have led to that point? Mm-hmm. Then we go, okay, if somebody is struggling right now, what's keeping that struggle going? You know, and we would call them perpetuating factors. What are the things that kind of keep the struggle alive? And for example, if someone has anxiety and they feel a bit anxious leaving the home, they, you know, they might avoid going out and they might stay home and they might make their anxiety go away in the imminent time, but that avoidance keeps the anxiety getting bigger and bigger. So it's kind of looking at what keeps the problem going. But we also look at what are people's strengths, because historically, a long time ago, psychology really focused on the crap stuff, like what's gone wrong, what's happened in your childhood. Let's just get you to average and, you know, that's better than feeling like crap. And now it's going, actually, no, how do we look at people's strengths? What are the things that have been helping people? And how do we help people kind of flourish in life more than just be averagely okay? So that's what a clinical psychologist does. But of course, like me, you can use those settings and formulate in all different places, et cetera. You then have educational psychologists that work with young or work with people that perhaps are struggling in the schooling system. So someone might have dyslexia, et cetera, and they would work to kind of optimize people's school experiences, learning experiences. You then have criminal psychologists, and they kind of specialize that, you know, when you see psychologists on TV and they're working in crime series and why did this offender do that? That's kind of what criminal psychologists study. So, and then there's counselling psychologists, which they do the talking therapy, but they might not have the same background as a clinical psychologist in terms of that scientific background.
Awesome. So our next question for you.
Let's move straight to this one.
So our next question is, do I need to go see a psychologist if I am struggling with my mental health?
Well, I think that's everybody's question they need to ask themselves. Are psychologists useful? Yes, if you're ready to talk and if you're ready to kind of perhaps be a bit challenged and look at things from a different perspective and learn some skills, because really psychology is more than just come in and have a chat. It's if you are coming to see me, I want you to walk away with new skills and new knowledge about yourself and how you can kind of manage things that are going on for you. But it doesn't necessarily need to be a psychologist. So you might not be ready to talk to somebody that you don't know, or you might have somebody in your community that is a real mentor, that is very grounded, that you want to go and kind of confide in and have some conversations with. Or some good friends or family, etc. So no, it doesn't have to be a psychologist at all. There's lots of networks people can tap into, but if you're struggling, you need to do something. You know, if you're struggling repeatedly and it's not changing, go and see your GP, you know, go and see a school counsellor if they're there. Go and see someone that might be able to kind of help you go, what's going on and how can I shift and change this up a bit?
Yeah, awesome. I think another question that kind of came through was, you know, if you do think you're at that stage of wanting to go see a psychologist, how do you go about seeing one? You know, do you just rock up to a kind of, you know, or call up like a clinic that you know psychologists are working at, or do you have to go through your GP, or what's the routes for going to see a psychologist?
There's lots of routes, and I will be really honest that sometimes it's a bit tricky because we're a bit overrun in this system. So there is always help somewhere, but you do have to know where to kind of go and get it. So it's a really good question. So some people listening to this will be at school, yeah?
Yeah.
So I would say if you're at school, you all should have a school guidance counsellor, and they are hopefully a helpful port of call. Yes, your GP is always really useful, and they might have a list of recommendations of people they know that are good, because you don't want to go see someone that's not good. You want to go see someone that you can build a relationship with. I think if I scratch my memory, something like 80% of success in therapy is to do with the rapport or the relationship with the therapist or the psychologist. So, you know, you have to find someone that's good and who you click with. So, you know, I'm just going to go off on a tangent now, but if you don't see someone and you think they are not for me, like this is not working, then don't go back and see them. Find someone else. That's okay. And people should, like, I was always really upfront. This is like the first session is like, it's like a trial. And if you don't like me or it's not quite right, that's totally okay. You know, so your GP, the school guidance counsellor, mum and dad, if you're talking to them, or if you're a young adult, Googling and finding people online. If you're wanting a clinical psychologist, There's a website called NZCCP, which is New Zealand College of Clin Psychs, and they've got a directory. And I'm pretty sure the Psych Society has a directory too. So there you can often put in where you live and what you're wanting someone for. But like, stalk the person you're going to go and see. Look at the website, see who they are, see if you feel like it's a good match, look at their language and how they've written. And that's kind of a good way. And was the second part, what should you expect when you turn up? Well, it'll be someone like me. We're not scary. But I do really acknowledge that when you go and see someone for the first time, that can be quite frightening. People have no idea what to expect. And you might have chosen to go and see someone, or your parents might be making you go and see someone. So I totally get that that can be kind of scary or anxiety provoking. Really, a first session is somebody like me talking you through what the process is, the fact that when you have a conversation, it's confidential, and confidentiality means everything that a client says to me in the room stays with me and me alone. I write secure notes. They get locked on my computer. The only person that would ever talk to or that I would talk to about them is with a supervisor, which is another psychologist, and they're bound by confidentiality. And the only time that there's a limit to that confidentiality is if somebody is at risk to themselves or at risk to someone else. So every time you see someone for the first time, not every session, but if you if you come in the first time, they will ask you about your risk. Are you okay? Have you had thoughts about self-harm or suicide? You will always get asked, because it's really important that a psychologist, a clinician, risk assesses that, because we want to make sure everybody's safe. But it's just a conversation. It's like this. I'm actually at my parents' house because it's family dinner night. I've skipped out of family dinner.
And
I come from a line of psychologists. So my mum is a psychologist and this is the office. So you literally come in, look, there's the brain and there's some chairs, you know, and you just come in and you have a chat, you know.
That's
not scary.
So obviously knowing what you're going to be walking into is going to be really helpful for that initial visit. But have you got any other tips for someone who might be feeling anxious about coming and seeing a psychologist? Like, is there anything that they could be doing to prepare themselves for that initial appointment?
Yeah. So I would sit down and write while you're going. What is it you want to talk about? And can you kind of write down a little history account for yourself in terms of what you want to raise? And you might not need it. You know, the psychologist might do a really good job at asking you lots of prompted questions, because I think that's what's scary for some people, is I think they're just going to come and sit in a chair and the psychologist is going to say nothing. There's lots of different types of people out there. There's psychologists, there's counsellors, there's psychotherapists. Some psychotherapists or counsellors, perhaps that's their tact. I don't think with a psychologist you would get that. There would be lots of questions. So I think that sometimes eases people's anxiety. But absolutely writing down why you want to go. Bring someone with you if you're anxious and you've got someone that you love or trust, or whether that's a family member or a friend or the school guidance counsellor or whoever it is. Like, if you've got someone that you trust and you'd like someone to come with you to start with, then absolutely you can do that. You know, we would never say, no, you can't come in. Often too, if you are a teen, you know, I used to work with teenagers and I always would want to see the parents too. I'd see the teen on their own, but I also would want to chat to the parents, because usually when it's young people, there's stuff going on at home. There's family systems that happen around a young person. Not always, but if it's not at home, it's normally at school. Like, normally something's going on in that young person's life. So it's kind of important you get all that information. So write it down, go with someone else, practice your belly breathing if you're really anxious and you want to breathe deep from your belly so that you can kind of feel calm when you go in.
Awesome.
I guess the other question that kind of came through was someone was talking about their friend and how they think that their friend could really benefit from seeing a psychologist, and, you know, but it's really, they're finding it really hard to not push someone. You can't force someone to go see a psychologist. So do you have any recommendations about what you can do if you know that your friend needs to see someone but you don't want to force them into going to see one?
You can't force anyone, huh? People have to be ready for themselves. What you can do is ask how that person is very genuinely, you know, and people always will pick up how authentic your tone is and how genuine you are in asking if they're okay. So, you know, the "are you okay? I'm worried about you. This is what I've noticed, you know, that's concerning. you know, having that conversation is really helpful. And you can have that conversation more than once. So even if someone says, I'm fine, leave me alone, you know, if in a few days' time or a week's time or whatever, you still notice that they're not okay, re-ask them. You know, you can then have a conversation with them about, have you ever thought about going to see someone, you know, and if they haven't or they say, yes, but I don't want to, you could say, what's stopping you going? What's burying you? You can offer to go with them, for example. You know, you can say, oh, I know it seems quite scary, but, you know, lots of people go and see psychologists. If you've been to see someone, tell them that, normalize it, you know. So, you know, it's really kind of going on that journey with someone. That's very different if you're worried that a friend is at risk. So if you're worried that a friend is self-harming or suicidal, then that isn't a sit and wait. So, you know, if you're really worried about someone, you need to ask them directly if they're at risk. Have they thought of hurting themselves? Have they thought about taking their own life? People are pretty honest when you ask them that question. And if they say yes, you need to tell an adult if you're young. So if you're a young person at school, you need to tell a parent or a teacher or a guidance counsellor or someone. You need support. If you're not a teen, if you're a young adult out of school or an adult, then it is not your job ever to keep someone safe. That is my job. That is the professional's job. So the best way of thinking of yourself is be the bridge to hand someone over. And so you ring 1737 or you ring the police or you ring the crisis team and you say, I'm really worried about my friend, this is what's going on, and you wait for them to come and you hand over, be the bridge.
Awesome. So in thinking about mental health, obviously it covers a broad range of things, but most commonly it's associated with anxiety and depression. In a nutshell, can you please let us know what mental health actually is?
Yeah, well, mental health is actually a good thing. Mental health, we all have it. Mental health is like physical health. And when you look at the definition of mental health, it means that you are living a life where you've got positive relationships in your life, your thinking and your emotions are kind of helpful for you, and that you're doing things that provide you purpose and meaning. Mental health is really, really important, and we need to do things to boost our mental health, just like we all exercise to boost our physical health. What people are talking about often is mental illness, and that's a term that New Zealanders don't like very often. Mm-hmm. We don't like to be told that we've got a mental illness or to label someone. And to be honest, I'm not a big labeler. When I worked with people one-on-one, I didn't do a lot of labeling. I don't find it particularly helpful most of the time. There are instances where it is very helpful, but for most of the population, actually what's most important is to be able to recognise when things are going wonky for you, whether that's your behaviour or your thinking or your emotions, etc., to be able to pick that up and then know how to get support. But the question was, how do you help your mental health? Was that the question?
No, it was just defining mental health was, yeah.
Well, there you go. if you're talking about anxiety and depression, I'll just say, so that's mental illness, not mental health.
Yeah.
Somebody... In order to say that somebody is experiencing anxiety or depression to a level that would be classified as a mental illness, it has to be having a pretty significant impact in their life. So that's not, I feel down for a few days and then I'm okay, or I'm a little bit worried about something, but I can still get on and do and act in my normal life. You know, it has to be, actually, this is causing impact and it's getting in the way of me going to school or going to work or interacting with people or getting out living my life, and it's around for a long time. So it's, I use my hands and I go, how much is it getting in the way this way and how long has it been around? So that's kind of your definition to help with kind of thinking about that.
Awesome. Another question kind of thing, I guess we kind of talk around and we kind of throw around the words emotions and thoughts, but is there a difference between them, or are they both the same thing, or are we using two different terms interchangeably?
No, they're different, but they're related. So initially it was only thought that your thoughts would produce emotions, but actually we know that emotions can produce thoughts too, so they can be bi-directional. It's quite useful to go, if you're having an emotion, it's normally one word. I'm feeling sad. I'm feeling happy. And thoughts are words strung together. So when you ask people how they're feeling, and if they give you a whole sentence back, well, that's probably their thought, not their emotion. So emotions are made up of your body's reaction, because you'll know if you're feeling excited, you get butterflies in your tummy, for example. But if I asked you to how do you feel when you're nervous, you'd also tell me you have butterflies in your tummy, right? Mm-hmm. So it's like, yes, I have these physiological sensations, but the thought is connected to help me determine, am I feeling excited or am I feeling nervous? So so there's kind of, they're interwoven, but they're different.
Nice. So obviously in New Zealand, we've just come out of lockdown and things with COVID are, you know, kind of forever changing. But for a lot of young people, this has brought a lot of nervousness and a lot of anxieties with everything changing. Is this normal? So this is a question we had. Is this normal and how can I go about managing that?
Yeah, it's totally normal because we're living in a world of uncertainty. Strangely enough, I think some people were anxious during lockdown because they were anxious about the virus and we didn't know whether the virus was under control, and that was really frightening to some people. I think we're now in a period where we've got complete uncertainty about whether we'll get a second wave of COVID now that there's cases at the border. We have no idea what's going on with the economy, and that is frightening for people that potentially are losing their jobs, or their parents have lost their jobs, or they don't know about the job security in that industry. We've got families that are separated across the world. We don't know when we are allowed to get on a plane next, etc. So we're like living in this complete world where we don't have a blueprint, and your brain interprets ambiguity or uncertainty or not knowing what's coming up exactly the same way as it would interpret a tiger chasing you. It turns on your fight or flight system. It means that you are on high alert all the time. You're looking out for things that might hurt you, you know, or things that are going to catch you by surprise. You have racing thoughts that are negative because your brain is trying to protect you, right? So I need to kind of filter everything that's going on and go, what information do I need to take hold to keep you safe, and what can I let go? What does that mean when people are anxious? They take hold of all the negative stuff that's happening in their life and they hold on to that tight and they ignore all the good stuff that's happening often. Yeah. So kind of that's the process that your body's going on to keep you safe. And so, yeah, that's really understandable. But anxiety as an emotion is different to, well, feeling anxious as an emotion is different to somebody having an anxiety disorder. So you might feel a bit anxious, but you can still get up and go to work and do your things. Mm-hmm. And that emotion might come and go like little waves. If you are like at the top of the wave of anxiety and it's not going, that's when it's like, oh, I need to sort this out. You know, I need to get some support. This is really unhelpful. This is getting in the way. So useful to go, does the emotion come and go? Cool, it's an emotion. We all have emotions. We all have anxiety. Or am I sitting at the top of the peak?
Awesome. I think you kind of talked about it before, and I think we'll just reiterate it again. Talking about anxiety, and someone had asked, how do you know if you have anxiety? And I guess you were talking about the, you know, how long has it been going and things like that. But just to reiterate, how would someone know if they have anxiety?
Yeah, they might notice things in their body. They might feel like they get racing hearts sometimes, or get really hot or really sweaty, or you might feel like your vision goes funny. Or you might feel sick quite often, feel like you can't eat. So there's a physiological component to anxiety. There's that thinking side, which is your thoughts get fast and they get negative, which might be like a catastrophe. So I always see the worst in every situation. Or I get really rigid or black and white in my thinking, you know, like I can't see the grey. And if I'm worried about something, it must be what's happening and there's kind of no other explanation. I might personalise things. So something goes on and I think I've done something. Why is that person upset? It's because of me. Or, you know, so I start to read personal meaning into everything. So there's kind of patterns of thoughts that you see in anxiety. There's then the feeling, you know, like I'm feeling anxious, I'm worried, and can you track your thoughts? I'm worried about COVID, I'm worried about my friend, I'm worried about going back to school, I'm worried about whether I'm going to lose my job, you know, and how much does someone ruminate on that? Because that's one of those perpetuating factors. The rumination keeps anxiety alive. And then there's the behavioural side. So, you know, for example, people avoid what they're anxious about. Or they seek reassurance. They ask people lots and lots and lots about whether things are going to be okay. Or you might see someone that looks at 3 million things on the news and social media to try and calm them, but it's actually making them way more anxious. So it's kind of breaking that down. What's my thinking doing at the moment? How am I feeling? What's my body doing? And what is my behaviours? And you know, the three of us could sit in a room and all have anxiety and all look different and all have different symptoms. So there's not a one size fits all. It's knowing yourself, knowing how much you've changed. And if you don't know, ask someone else for feedback. Do I see myself right now, or am I seeming different? Mm-hmm. Ask someone that's gentle with their feedback.
What would you say would be the difference between depression and a low mood?
Yep. So again, I can have a funky mood that comes and goes, perhaps, you know, or I can feel the word we use in psychology is apathetic, which is I don't give a shit. I don't really care that much, you know, like I used to get excited about things or I used to really enjoy things. And now I just feel meh. Feeling meh or apathetic is kind of that low mood level compared to feeling depressed, where you might feel really sad or really guilty or really hopeless. And sometimes people kind of feel low for so long, they start feeling nothing with depression. So it's kind of like levels. The low mood is either an emotion that comes and goes, or it's kind of more shallow. And the depression is deeper. And depression has physiological signs that go with it. So people that experience depression might lose or gain appetite. They might find it hard to sleep, or they might sleep lots. You know, so there's some kind of physiological things that go on with depression as well.
Awesome, thank you. Another question that kind of came through was, I guess someone was talking about burnout. So we hear the term burnout, but what are the signs of burnout, or what are the signs that we are doing too much? Because sometimes we may not even recognise it. And so, you know, how do we know that when we're doing too much?
I was really surprised that came through from a young person. Burnout's normally something I hear from people at work, you know, into their career. So is that something that people your age, because I'm so old with my grandkids, are having conversations about?
There's a conversation coming up.
Wow, that's so interesting. So burnout is like when there's nothing left in the tank, you know, and that could be that you're working so much, you're not taking recovery and you're not looking after your well-being. So you're not seeing your friends, you're not doing things you enjoy, you're not exercising, you're not sleeping well, and that work is all-consuming, or your worry about something is all-consuming, for example, school or exams or whatever, that you just work. And with burnout, your thinking then starts to go wonky. You can't hold perspective very well. It's often got a component where it links to low mood, for example, because you're not getting any of the other joyous good stuff in your life. You get really run down. If you stop, you often get sick. So it's like when people go on holiday and they get sick because they've worked so much. Proper burnout, like when people are physiologically burnt out, is awful, and it takes a very long time to come back from, you know. And I think people all around the world, but definitely in New Zealand, get stuck in this trap of, I'll just keep going, I just need to put in more effort, or, you know, as long as I do that, then I'll stop. But then something else comes up and you just keep going. We live in a world where we don't really get breaks anymore, you know. Even if you catch the bus home, you then have a phone in front of you. You don't sit and rest and recover. And so it's really important you get recovery for your brain, recovery from your body every day. And if you're not getting that, then you kind of burn the candle at both ends, and that's what burnout is. So, you know, that's why it's really important. And I think it's a great thing to start when you're young, to go, how do I actually look after my mental health and well-being so that I can actually be on top of my game? Because I'm going to be a far better performer, a far better friend, a far better partner if I am energized and well than if I am exhausted, emotionally exhausted, you know, and I'm cynical and I'm grumpy and I'm, you know, like, that's not great.
Yeah. So this week I had spoken to one of my classes at school, and one of the things that had come up with them was a lot of people seem to be struggling with their sleep at the moment. Mm. Have you got any tips for young people who are struggling with sleep at the moment? What's some things that they could be doing to try and make that a bit easier?
Yep, get ready for the eye roll of get off your phone for a few hours before you go to bed. The reason for that, and I don't know if they teach this at school or if all young people know that, is that when you look at your phone or when you look at screens, there's blue light. That blue light tells your brain it's daytime. And so if you're doing that right up to the time that you try and go to sleep and then you hit the sack and you're like, yeah, it's nighttime, your brain's like, no, it's not. I've been looking at a blue sky. You know, it's daytime. So you know, get off your screens and do something that's like calming before you go to bed. So when we were all little, my little girl upstairs, you have sleep routines, right? You know, my girl knows it's time to bed because she has a bottle, she gets her sleep sack on, she gets read a story, and it's the same every night. And actually grown-ups are the same. That's called sleep hygiene. So, you know, what is your routine, and do the same thing every night, you know, if you can. If you're awake for more than 20 minutes, get out of bed, go and do something that's like washing the dishes or reading your book, or but actually get up and get out of bed and then come back to bed and try is really helpful. Make sure the temperature of your room, like if I'm too hot, I don't sleep. Make sure you've got really good dark curtains. So all that kind of stuff makes a difference for your sleep. You know, not exercising within kind of 2 hours of going to bed, because if you exercise too much just before you go to bed again, you're like adrenaline up. So you know, all those things that are kind of calming at the end of the day. If you're staying awake, because not sleeping can be, I find it hard to get to sleep. It can be I get to sleep and I wake up at 3 o'clock and then I can't get back to sleep. There's kind of different things that people struggle with sleep. But if worry is something that's keeping you awake, have a pen and paper by your bed and actually write it down. And that's really helpful because your brain goes, you're not going to forget that. It's physically there. Mm-hmm. It's called a brain extender. So I've extended that from my brain, I'll be all right. So that's a useful strategy too that people find helpful.
Nice.
Never have arguments with people after 10 o'clock. That's been the rule in this house forever.
So. That's a good one.
It's the time of year at the moment. So for uni students, we've all just kind of finished the end of semester, exams have just finished. Or for high school students, you know, we're coming up to the last week of term. So it's quite a bit of a busy time. You know, a lot of people are feeling a little bit stressed if they're worried about assessments or exams, or even if they've come out of a really stressful period or they're still in a really stressful period. What are some really good tips for dealing with stress?
Know where the stress is coming from is a really good place to start. Do you know? Is that because you're too busy? Is that because you're spread too thin? Is that because you're worried about something? Lots like work out where the stress is coming from. Again, I'm going to go back to recovery is really important. So are you getting enough physical exercise every day? Are you getting mental recovery? So do you do things like mindfulness or actually just spend time thinking, because you need reflection time. That's really important for your brain's recovery. And like I say, you know, you used to maybe get on the bus and you just stare out the window and think, but people don't do that anymore. So go and have a bubble bath and don't put Netflix on the laptop. Go and sit in there, you know, or go for a walk without electronics and just, you know, that's really helpful for your mental recovery. You also need emotional recovery, which is laugh. Like you need good stuff in your life. What brings you joy? What brings you energy? What are you passionate about? Like what are your hobbies or what are the things that really light you up? And so actually every day, are you doing things that you enjoy? Because if life is just a slog and you don't enjoy any of it, like if you hate going to school, for example, well, do you go and do something after school that's nice for yourself, you know, that is kind of like your reward, or at least it gets you a boost of positive emotion? Or if you're an adult, you know, same thing, you know, people get stuck into the daily grind. They get up, they go to work, they come home, especially in winter, it's dark. And if it's raining outside, I don't want to go for a run. And then that just cycles, right? And so it's like, you know, actually, maybe you're a really good cook and you enjoy that. Spend time cooking nice food. You know, I enjoy bushwalking. And so even when it's raining, I like put on my parka and out I go and I look like a knob, and that's okay. But nature is really good for you, and that's something that's really important to me. Or, you know, so it's kind of like, can you get the good stuff in your life every day as well?
Yeah. Awesome. All right, we're coming up to our last couple of questions. So one of them is, obviously it's different if your friend is at risk to themselves or someone else, but how can you support your friend if they are struggling with their mental health?
Be there, listen, listen without trying to provide an answer, because actually mostly people just want to talk and be heard. If they're, you know, if you're struggling, the last thing that's probably helpful in that moment is someone giving you a multi-choice list about things that will make you feel better. The reason is, if you're in a low mood or you're struggling, it's actually like your brain finds it quite hard to compute information and to hold concentration when you're struggling. So someone's telling you stuff to do, they're probably not even taking it in, you know? And actually, I imagine you yourselves, me maybe, if I'm in a not great space and someone tells me to do something, I go, yeah, I've tried that, but yeah, I've tried that. So actually just be there, and be there consistently, I think is really important. Continue to do the are you okays, drag your friend out for a walk even if they don't want to do it. Like, what's the good things? Getting fresh air, getting exercise. You know, when you look at the research, exercise gives you, or like hard intense exercise gives you, a boost to your serotonin and to your mood within half an hour of doing it. If you go on medication for depression, for example, it's not going to work within 30 minutes, you know? And so I'm not saying that's the only answer, but it definitely helps. So it's like, you know, drag them out to go for a walk with you, or say, do you want to come and see a film? Or, you know, like try and do some nice things with them. And yes, it's important to do the are you okays, but you don't need to talk about how crap things are all the time either. You know, like distraction is actually really useful. So, you know, remember the person that you were friends with before they were struggling, and what did they enjoy? And, you know, in a very kind way, maybe kind of do some liaising to get them engaging in some of that again.
Awesome. And I think one of the kind of last questions that came through was, we hear the big term of self-care, or we hear the big term about mindfulness, and we hear all these kind of things that can get thrown around, especially, just people hear the terms like self-care and things. Is it a hipster term, or is it something that we should actually all be doing?
Well, is your mental health important? Is your physical health important? My answer to that would be yes. People need to make that decision up for themselves. But I think if you ask someone, would you like to live a life that's satisfying, that has good relationships in it, that you enjoy, or would you like to live a life that's miserable? Ask people to answer that question. And we know now more than ever, in this busy, changing, crazy world we live in, that we have to look after ourselves. And to be honest, no one else probably is going to do that for you. And the older you get, the more you realize that. You know, if you're young, you probably have mum on your back trying to help you out and remind you to do stuff that's good. But the older you get, you've got to do it for yourself. So, if you want to think clearly, if you want to reach your potential, if you want to be happy and satisfied in life, if, you know, if you want to enjoy things around you, if you want to be in the world, you need to look after your mental health and well-being. So, not just a hipster term. It's important. How we all do that, though, is different.
Yeah.
Just because someone else looks after their mental health and well-being in one way, you know, like, I'm not into yoga. I've tried it a million times. I don't enjoy it.
Yeah.
You know, I'm agitated that I can't hold the pose for long enough. I find that, you know, it's not relaxing for me. But going for a walk is, you know, so it's like trying to work out all the things that work for you. And that will take time. That's trial and error.
Yeah, awesome. And I guess our final question we've been asking all of our speakers for the series is, what's one thing you would like young people to take away from this conversation tonight?
To know that they're important, and to know that sometimes life can be tough. And you would say that, and I will say that. I've had tough times in my life. It's not always a breeze. Mm-hmm. What you see on social media isn't people's lives. That's just what they have chosen to project to the world. And just to be kind to yourself when things are hard, to really sit and think, what do I need to feel better in this moment? To wrap yourself just around with people that make you feel good, you know, like you have permission to avoid people that don't make you feel good in those times. And to hold hope, like, you know, things are always brighter with time, with change, you know, that can happen. So, you know, if you can set in really good well-being habits young in your life and keep them going, then you are well ahead of the game, you know, because that's what we call being resilient, that if shit happens, if things are challenging, you actually have got the reserves and the skills to manage that. That's when you become adaptive and thrive in life. Doesn't mean the stressful stuff doesn't happen, but it means you can navigate it and work it out.
Yeah. Awesome. Well, thank you so much, Jackie, for joining us tonight. We've really appreciated it.
Yak Yarns, for fun conversations with health professionals about youth health. Get the podcast at plainsfm.org.nz, Apple Podcasts, and Spotify. You can get in touch with the CDHB Youth Advisory Council on the CDHB website, Facebook, Instagram, or you can email them at cdhbyouth@gmail.com.